the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
And we're joined now by the Minister for Health, Jennifer Carl McNeill, to talk about a few things. I want to talk about scoliosis. I want to talk about the National Children's Hospital. And if we've time, Fine Gael's presidential nominee. But I do want to start with, you have an announcement today in relation to the RSV immunisation programme. Who's this going to be available to and why is it important?
This is a programme that is available now to very young babies. It will be delivered in maternity hospitals from the 1st of September through the winter to the end of February. So if you're having a baby, you're in a maternity hospital, your baby will be offered the vaccination there. It will also be offered to babies up to the age of 6 months of age. So from Monday, what you would do is go on the hse.ie website and you can book an appointment. So that's how you can get it. So it's targeted at very young babies, and the reason for that is because RSV can be a potential very, very serious illness. This is a respiratory illness impacting in particular very young babies. It will protect your baby. It will protect your very young infant from what can be potentially a very severe illness. And of course, that's what we want. We want babies to be protected. It will also help us manage the emergency departments, help manage the presentations and reduce overcrowding and reduce illness in a period where we know respiratory illnesses are more active and potentially much more severe. So I would encourage anybody listening to please go on the website next week, hse.ie, and book an appointment.
There's a certain degree of vaccine reluctance amongst many parents at present. What are the chances that if you don't take the vaccine that a baby will get RSV and could be hospitalised?
Look, that's a very difficult thing to say, but what we do know is that the RSV vaccination is very effective at protecting babies who have had it, and that babies who have not had it and contract RSV can face very potentially serious illnesses. But I would say about vaccine scepticism more broadly, or vaccine concern, we have managed globally, not just in Ireland, but globally, to eradicate or bring to the point of near irrelevance major illnesses, smallpox, measles, mumps. And through a certain reluctance or concern in relation to vaccines or a lack of uptake in vaccines, we're seeing this a little bit with HPV in teenagers as well. These illnesses are creeping back in. We have seen transformations in modern medicine through antibiotics and through vaccines. And we are able to cure things that we weren't able to cure, and we are able to prevent illnesses we weren't able to prevent. That is not just the case in Ireland, but it's around the globe. And when we look at the scepticism and the concern that we have for example, the United Nations or the United States pulling funding from global vaccination programs, and what that means for global health, malaria and serious preventable illnesses that are prevented through vaccines, I would encourage everybody to reflect on the global position about vaccines, the importance that the importance that they have in public health, and to please, please take the vaccines that are available.
But just come back to the RSV for a second for me. Do you have many babies ending up in hospital every year to be treated for RSV that you would hope you will reduce that number dramatically by reintroducing the vaccine?
Yes, you know, so like last winter alone, there was an estimated reduction by 57% in emergency department presentations, a 76% in reductions in hospitalizations, and a 65% reduction in intensive care admissions compared to the previous year. And that was on foot of the success of the vaccine. It is a significant decline, and it shows how effective the immunization program can be. So please, if you do have a very young baby, please do take it.
I want to talk to you about scoliosis treatment, because that's very much back in the news following the death of 9-year-old Harvey Morrison Sherratt. And this has become a major issue for one of your predecessors as Minister for Health, your party leader, Simon Harris. What exactly is the situation at present when it comes to waiting for scoliosis surgery? How long do children have to wait?
May I first say, because I haven't to date, and I haven't been on the radio, that I am so I offer my sincere condolences and sympathies to Harvey's family. And I recognise, and I've listened very carefully to that family, and in particular to his father yesterday on the radio, describe how the health service let him down, and the experience that that whole family had as a consequence of appointments cancelled, being taken off waiting lists, and not having the communication and the respect that they deserved and the treatment that he needed at the times that he needed it. And it raises enormously important concerns, both for the individual family, of course, but for the system generally. And I want to work with them and all of the scoliosis advocacy groups in making sure that the reforms that it's my responsibility to bring in are felt by the families, and that the experience of children who are being diagnosed with scoliosis today is a very different experience than the experience that Harvey faced. Some of the things that I'm trying to do to make that happen include a very different way of approaching managing the waiting lists. This is one of the key issues that has come up again and again in relation to the management of waiting times, the coordination of the multidisciplinary services that are necessary for a surgery to happen in many cases. For example, cardiology, respiratory, all of those things must happen together for many children. And so there's a couple of different things that are happening, if I may outline them to you. So number one, we're changing the way in which, not just for scoliosis, but orthopedic surgery generally and other areas, the way in which waiting lists are managed. No longer will it be the case that an individual consultant manages their own waiting list. Rather, my child or yours is diagnosed and will be managed centrally and then allocated to a surgeon for care so that everybody's list is equal, that we can see where the capacity is, and there is no one surgeon perhaps controlling, managing or over-influencing the timing of surgeries or the way in which they're managed. It also gives us better oversight where something is going wrong, that we're able to intervene in a more centralised way. This is absolutely necessary for the management of the list, but also communication with families. They have not had the responsiveness that they need when they articulate that something is wrong, that they need additional help, or to get the clarity or the responsiveness on where their child is and what services they're getting and when. Now, this is not unique. This is not the case in all CHI disciplines, but it has been certainly an issue in relation to orthopaedic surgery.
Okay, so is this implying that the problem up until now has been the reason why that you've had children waiting beyond 4 months for surgery, why you've had cancellations that haven't been explained to parents, why children have gone off the list of those due to have surgery, has been because individual doctors have been unable to perform the surgery, and now by having a centralised list you will have better management of it?
That is only one part of it. It is by no means a complete explanation, but it is a very important part of it. So for example, if word surgeon leaves or goes sick, what happens to their list? It cannot be held within the confines of their office. It must be managed centrally. It is one part, but by no means the complete picture. We have invested significant additional resources into scoliosis, an additional dedicated MRI machine, additional theatre capacity. We have not seen the uptick in surgeries that we would have expected commensurate with the level of investment. Accordingly, myself and the HSE CEO have commissioned an internal audit into some of the practices in three disciplines in CHI, two of which are surgical, urology and spinal surgeries, and then orthopaedic surgeries. This results not just from our concern in relation to scoliosis, but the management of other lists that have been the subject of a lot of public discussion, like urology lists, like the hip list, the hip management issue. So there is an internal audit happening now that has begun into how people have equity of access to treatments, whether they're being treated publicly or privately, and how the waiting lists are being managed. That work is happening at the moment, and it is a very important piece of our work.
Why
for
is
the
it
future.
Only happening now? Given that back in 2017, scoliosis was identified as a major issue, and your party leader and your predecessor as Minister for Health, Simon Harris, made a firm commitment back in 2017 that no child would have to wait for more than 4 months. It's 8 years on that you're now looking at rectifying the way in which surgeries are given to children.
There's no question but that this has been a persistently difficult issue, most importantly for the children who have been born and who have required treatment in that period. And I do not want to see it happen for the future. There is a step-by-step approach that needs to be taken here. For example, additional resources were put into recruiting more surgeons, but not all of the surgeons have been recruited. One of them has and started on the 11th of August. And I will see their surgery scheduled now when I meet CHI next week and to see the impact that that will have. We have had a new chief operating officer appointed to CHI whose first piece of work for the first number of months that they will be doing it is dedicated to this. I will have better oversight of how the waiting lists are managed. But I am disappointed and not satisfied that I have the correct answers yet as to why the number of surgeries doesn't increase with the level of investment. We do have more people coming on the list. Now, that's in part because we're now doing Saturday outpatient clinics, and so we're identifying more people. And of course, we will always have more people going onto a list in circumstances where we have a rising population. That's as may be. What we're really concerned about is the timelines for surgery, the timelines for treatment, not all of which is surgical in the first instance, but that children are getting the right treatment at the right time. Our targets are the Sláintecare care targets, as they are for everything else, that you're seen within 3 months and that you have an appropriate pathway of care, which may not in the first instance be surgery. It may be traction. It may be a range of different things as the child develops and grows, but that they do get surgery then at the appropriate moment.
But again, the point is, should this not have all been done 8 years ago when a promise was made by Simon Harris that every child would have surgery within 4 months?
So I think I agree that this has been a consistent problem, and it is up to me to make sure the resources have been put in, that they are being deployed and managed in a way that is generating the response that patients need. And that is very important. I think Simon Harris made a commitment based on the clinical information provided to him. But the reality is that A, our targets are actually to be seen within 3 months, and B, not every child necessarily needs surgery within 4 months. They need surgery at the moment that they need surgery. And if I may explain, very young children, for example, may need to be in traction for a period. Child may need to grow to the point where it is clinically appropriate, and it is clinicians who should decide. But the surgeries need to happen at the right moment. And at the moment, we have too much dissatisfaction. There are too many parents expressing concern to me about the way in which their child has been treated to date. Now, I also do hear, it has to be said, from parents at an earlier stage who are satisfied with the treatment that they're getting to date. But I need this to be a completely consistent experience for children and for their parents, that they are getting the services and the communication, and crucially, the responsiveness when they raise a problem.
Will treatment for all sorts of issues be available in a timely fashion for children when the National Children's Hospital finally begins to open? And the reason I ask that is that we're already seeing delay after delay after delay. We're hearing reports of further delays for the commissioning and opening of the National Children's Hospital. And the fear is going to be that as transfers are made from the existing hospitals over to the new hospital, that we'll end up actually getting the waiting list getting longer.
So the most important thing for the Children's Hospital is, of course, that it opens and opens safely, and that it opens with the specialties that are moving across and not bringing the difficulties of the past with them in terms of organisation or culture. And I'm very aware of that, that there have been persistent cultural issues identified in particular in orthopaedic surgery, which have been identified through a number of reports that we have spoken on your show before. The hospital will open and will also grow over time as staffing complements grow. So the day one figure of the number of staff, you know, this will naturally grow over time. What I'm concerned about is that the hospital is open as quickly as possible, that BAM have the contractors on site that they are supposed to have, that every week, that they are drawing down from the state the wages to pay those contractors, which is evidence to me of the appropriate level of activity to deliver the hospital as agreed, and that we have the early access to be able to move in and start commissioning the hospital in a safe way.
But they're falling behind schedule again, aren't they? Every time you do an agreement with BAM, they seem to fall behind schedule, don't they?
That is certainly the evidence to date. And it is certainly the case that the end of last year, they had 800 and 900 contractors, people working on site, and that the figure at the moment is between 400 and 500. And that is a matter of significant concern, and one I've pointed out publicly before. There's about 10 million available to BAM every month to be paid for wages for staff working, but they're only drawing down about, my most recent information, 2.8 to 3 million euros.
And have you found out why that is?
There are not enough people working on site to deliver the hospital in the way that we want.
Why are they not getting that people? They were able to, for example, finish the Intel site down in Leixlip on time and on budget. Why are they treating the government differently?
You're right. It's a very significant reputational issue for BAM. And that is something that the board is following up very carefully with them, that I will be following up very carefully. And it is a very significant reputational issue for BAM that the hospital must be finished and finished on time according to the contracts that have been agreed and the payments that have been made to them to complete the hospital on time. There is no question about that. And I have no difficulty setting that out, indeed, to the Oireachtas Committee or anybody else. But what I'm saying very clearly is there is a substantial reduction in the number of people that have been working on site. We are available to pay contractually up to 10 million euros a month by way of example, and only nearly a third, around a third of that is being drawn down. They are important indicators of activity, which is the responsibility of BAM.
One last thing on the National Children's Hospital, though. And this is one for the future, but the work has to be done on now. Any concerns that you're going to find it difficult to adequately staff the hospital with all the doctors and nurses you need? Because it's by no means guaranteed that everybody will be willing to transfer from their existing employments.
There are a range of concerns that I have about staffing the Children's Hospital and indeed the hospital system more broadly. I mean, we have funded about 6,000 posts in the healthcare system that have yet to been recruited, not through lack of effort, not through lack of funding, but the availability of people. For example, I mentioned there about we have the opportunity to recruit, say, five orthopaedic surgeons in an area. and maybe two people apply, or maybe five people apply and three of them aren't qualified. This is a constant problem trying to recruit more doctors. One of my jobs is to make sure this is going very well, I have to say, with nursing, reasonably well with some of the healthcare, social care professionals, but it needs to be much better on the medical council side of things. The speed of registration of people, of doctors, of medical professionals who want to work in Ireland needs to improve very substantially. There's a public safety imperative in making sure that we have enough doctors. Where we can recruit them, they need to be registered as quickly as possible. But it is certainly true to say that in a growing population that needs more and more healthcare staff, while I have the funding for many of them, we are still struggling to recruit more and more. And that's a question not just for the Children's Hospital, but for every hospital.
And in that regard, given our dependence on doctors and nurses coming from outside Ireland, from outside Europe, how worrying is it that the word is going out that this country is becoming increasingly racist in its approach, particularly towards people from the Indian subcontinent?
That's enormous concern, not just first and foremost for people who are experiencing racism, and not just the reputational issue around it, but the act of experiencing it.
I mean it for the recruitment, and I fully agree with a disgrace that anyone would be treated in that way. But if you were trying to recruit people,
of course,
then it becomes an issue. Why would they go to Ireland if they're going to get treated in this way?
But I agree with you, and that's not what we want to see, and that's not what we want to happen. I attended the Philippines Independence Day specifically to thank the very large number of Filipino nurses and doctors who are working in Ireland, and to recognise the contribution that that community is making to Ireland. We're seeing more Irish nurses, Irish trained nurses staying in Ireland. That's the evidence of the Nurses and Midwifery Board to me. But we are right, we are still dependent on people coming from outside. Can I say as well, there's a very important reflection to have about doctors and nurses coming from the global south, as it were, to Ireland. Those countries also need their doctors and nurses. And Ireland works at a global level to make sure that we are training people in a reciprocal way, to make sure that we are supporting those countries and not just taking from the global south. And we are leaders on that. I don't want people to feel as though we are acting in a negative way in this way. But I do want Ireland to have the reputation of being a safe place to be, that it is a good place to work. We are still continuing to attract people. And what I'm saying is that where we are attracting those people, they need to be registered as quickly as possible. So this is there's a lot of different factors in this. There's a lot to do at the same time. That's fine. That's the work of government. That's what we've got to get on with. But I'm just trying to articulate, honestly, the different challenges that we have in recruitment in lots of different areas.
Minister for Health, Jennifer Carroll-McNeill, thank you.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.